It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The American Academy of Pediatrics updates its recommendations on how to manage obesity in children. The leading pediatricians group says children should be offered more intensive treatment options earlier, as the CDC estimates over 14 million children and adolescents are affected. Call in throughout the conversation on childhood obesity, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Sandra Hassink is Medical Director of the American Academy of Pediatrics Institute for Healthy Childhood Weight and past president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, co-author on these new guidelines from the Academy. Dr. Hassink, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. I'm delighted to be here.
So the longstanding approach to obesity management was this term watchful waiting or delaying treatment to see if kids outgrew obesity. Why change from this approach?
Well, Kate, I think that watchful waiting is not quite the way we did it. The last guidelines were written 15 years ago, and we did recommend starting treatment for children, but we didn't have a real grasp of what the evidence-based treatment included and how intense it had to be right from the start. The term watchful waiting was used because a lot of people in the public thought that maybe children could outgrow obesity. And what we've learned is obesity is not easy to outgrow and usually starts and accelerates through childhood. So all that combined, we really recommend now evaluation and treatment as soon as obesity is diagnosed.
And you've used some forceful language yourself against watchful waiting. I wonder, your thinking on childhood obesity evolved over the years as a pediatrician?
Actually, not. I started my clinic in the 1980s and was struck immediately by how hard it was for the children and families to just contend with the obesogenic environment that we had even back then, and was almost continuously amazed at how the comorbidities of obesity filtered down into childhood. So I was seeing children with type 2 diabetes and liver disease and hypertension and lipid problems even early on. So, but the culture really has stigmatized obesity and laid blame in a way at the feet of the children and families. And I think this really made intense early treatment not as prominent because of this weight bias and stigma in the culture.
I thought it was really interesting too, as you talk about weight bias, that there appears to be this shift in how the Academy now looks at obesity through the lens of this is a biological condition that's passed down. It's not lifestyle. Can you talk about that shift?
Well, I think that we've learned a lot more about obesity in this intervening 15 years. And we know that obesity has metabolic and immunologic consequences and triggers the body to produce changes that result in these chronic diseases. And this is really the result of ongoing study of what obesity is and does to the body. And I think we continue to learn. And as we learn, we realize what is needed to effectively treat this chronic complex disease. And it is very complex.
People might say this is a lot all at once. Why did it take 15 years to release new guidelines?
Well, we actually have been working on these guidelines for about 5 years, believe it or not. We did an intense evidence review early on, and then again, the committee's been meeting continuously and meeting through the COVID epidemic. And we worked very intensely on this because we wanted to be complete. We wanted to really reflect the state of where obesity was and the evidence. So, Yes, we're very proud that we've come up with the guidelines as a guide to pediatricians and families in how we deal with obesity now.
Talking about these new recommendations for treating childhood obesity from the American Academy of Pediatrics, Dr. Sandra Hassink, Medical Director of the Academy's Institute for Healthy Childhood Weight and co-author of the new guidelines. You can join in along the way on childhood obesity and your stories, 800-642-1234. Dr. Hassink, the guidelines say anti-obesity drugs can be offered to some children 12 and up. Weight loss surgery now considered appropriate for some teens, 13 and older. Why do you support these guidelines?
Well, first we have to put that in context, because all children should really have intense health and behavioral lifestyle treatment. And that's the core of all treatment for all children. And even when you have a drug treatment as an adjunct or surgery as an adjunct, children are still receiving with their families this lifestyle treatment. There are children where the obesity is severe, or the comorbidities are severe, and lifestyle treatment isn't enough. And we have treatment now that's pharmacological, that's evidence-based, and surgery that's evidence-based. And remember, obesity is a chronic disease, and you wouldn't withhold treatment for children who are struggling with a chronic disease, who need all the help they can get.
Could allowing teens to undergo weight loss surgery have negative consequences later in life? How do you know about these outcomes later in life?
Well, I think we have a lot of data from teens, and not 70-year data for sure, but we have a lot of data from teens and from adults. This is where you balance what you know about long-term data and what you know about the effect of the comorbidities on these children now and in the near and long term. So a child with type 2 diabetes or severe hypertension or sleep apnea is not going to fare well as they move into adulthood and are going to be dealing with these chronic illnesses that are quite severe. So in any decision about pharmacotherapy or surgery, the whole child is considered in the complete context of where their physical, mental, and psychological health is, their history, what the risk factors for obesity are, what the state of the comorbidities are. We thoroughly evaluated and for the risks and indications of that specific therapy. So we take it seriously, very seriously, but we don't want to withhold help for children who need it.
The FDA approving the use of the medication called Wegovy for teens 12 and up recently. Taking a bit more understanding here of this particular drug, what should parents keep in mind about the use of this drug for weight loss?
Well, I think parents really, the first step is to connect with their pediatrician and get the child thoroughly evaluated physically for the comorbidities, and then discuss the drug with the pediatricians. There are specialists that in comprehensive weight management centers, which also can be, the pediatrician can refer the child to for a thorough evaluation of metabolic and bariatric surgery. So this is a discussion. This isn't just a knee-jerk reaction to put a child on medicine. This is a thorough discussion, as you would with any medication, in conjunction with the lifestyle therapy. So parents are encouraged to really have the discussion of all the therapeutic options that are available to the child.
Can you tell us at all any about the side effects of this medication?
I think that the side effects are, that's not my area of expertise. So
sure.
I'm not, go into that, and I don't want to get into an area I'm not expert at.
Sure. We heard from Jenny in Williams Bay, called to ask, is there a connection to rising obesity with the pandemic and increased screen use? Jenny says that their teenagers are often on devices and that they rarely go outside.
Oh, such a good question, Jenny. Thank you for that. We actually put out guidance around obesity during the pandemic. We anticipated that there might be a rise in obesity because of exactly what Jenny is talking about, the increase in sedentary behavior, the disruption in sleep patterns, the lack of structure, because some kids, needed the structure of school. And we are seeing a rise in obesity as a result of the pandemic. And screen time and sedentary behavior are certainly among the big risk factors for obesity. And the pandemic just triggered a lot of those.
Dr. Sandra Hassink, co-author on the American Academy of Pediatrics' latest comprehensive childhood obesity guidelines, call in with your questions about extra body weight on kids and what can be done about it. Share your reaction to the updated guidelines, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Childhood obesity is at epidemic proportions, and the American Academy of Pediatrics issued new guidelines. There's now ages at which kids and teens should be offered medical treatments like drugs, like bariatric surgery. Call in with your questions about childhood obesity, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have pediatrician Sandra Hassink, who is medical director of the American Academy of Pediatrics Institute for Healthy Childhood Weight, stays with us. Dr. Hassink, the new guidelines really emphasize this holistic approach to obesity treatment and including factors like mental health and social inequities. And I'm wondering if you could speak more to this approach, because you mentioned this intensive health behavior treatment. How does that type of counseling work into the approach of treatment?
So when one thing we really have always appreciated is obesity is a complex chronic disease, and it's not the same for every child and family. There are risk factors that are more prevalent in some families than others. If you live in a community that has a lot of food insecurity, or unsafe places to be active and play, those risk factors play into your obesity. If you, just like Jenny said, are dealing with a lot of sedentary behavior and screen time, some children have a heavier genetic component to their obesity. So when we evaluate the whole child, we look at all these risk factors. We look at the health overall of the child and how obesity is impacting their individual health. We also look at the effect of weight bias and stigma and mental health. Many children have been teased and bullied. They may not even be telling their parents that has happened. So we look at that, and we look at their eating patterns and their mental health. Then the intense health and lifestyle behavior has strong nutrition, physical activity, and behavioral components, and the strong evaluation component, and is tailored to that individual child's and family's needs. Because remember, we're talking here about children from 2 to 18. So developmentally, this is tailored also to their developmental stage.
And this would be sessions maybe from a psychological or a clinical setting, a therapy setting. This is perhaps a piece that is outside the pediatrician's office, or what is the role of the pediatrician here?
The pediatrician, we recommend that the medical home, the pediatrician, be the touch point here. And the pediatrician can deliver this with a team in their clinic. Many pediatricians partner with local dietitians. The pediatricians and families can also access community programs if they're available. The intervention is really multiple visits, extended from 3 to 12 months over 26 hours was where the evidence came from that these programs are effective. But remember, this is really longitudinal, long-term care. And there are many communities who now have some resources available to help pediatricians and families with nutrition education and experience and physical activity opportunities. And there's also, you know, behavioral counseling embedded in all of this.
Let's take a look for a moment at body mass index, BMI, the guidelines using BMI to measure if a child or a teen is overweight or obese. And the BMI has, you know, received criticism as this flawed measure for failing to consider an individual's muscle mass and their bone density and demographic differences. Why use BMI?
Well, we think of BMI. First of all, BMI does correlate with fat mass. It's not in the clinical setting. And we think of BMI here in the guidelines as a screening tool. You don't stop after you measure the BMI. It's an indicator for further evaluation, where all those considerations such as muscle mass and setting and are taken into consideration. We think of it as blood pressure. If you take a blood pressure and it's high, you don't stop there. You further evaluate the child and all the contextual elements and physical elements that go into that. So it's not, the guidelines do not use it as a labeling, more as a screening test that indicates the need for further evaluation.
Okay, so BMI is kind of a screening, a launch pad, if you will.
Kate, I love that term. It's a launch pad for all the evaluation that then takes place.
Obesity medicine in pediatricians. I'm wondering, you know, there has been research showing significant variability in how much formal obesity training is provided to pediatricians. Are these specialists adequately trained in obesity medicine and able to implement these new guidelines?
Well, we are very fortunate that across the country, we do have obesity specialists. They're usually located at children's hospitals. And pediatricians over the years have gotten more and more training, but this is one of the big efforts of the guidelines. We have a whole implementation plan of education and resources that we're offering to pediatricians to really understand obesity, the evaluation that's needed, and the treatment. And we have a section at the Academy of Pediatrics of pediatricians who are involved and especially interested in obesity to also support each other and help each other as we all try to learn as fast as we can and move this guideline out into practice.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the new recommendations for treating childhood obesity out from the American Academy of Pediatrics. We have Dr. Sandra Hassink, Medical Director of the Academy's Institute for Healthy Childhood Weight and co-author of the new guidelines. You can join in. Still time for your questions at 800-642-1234. Dr. Hassink, how will the insurance industry react to these new treatment protocols, you know, in covering the costs of the childhood obesity epidemic?
Kate, this has been an uphill fight all the way. I think some of the bias and stigma, the cultural bias and stigma about obesity penetrated the insurers. This is a chronic complex disease and treatment needs to be paid for. And this is an advocacy issue for the Academy. And we are hoping that insurers begin to recognize that this is a disease, treatment is available and effective, and treatment should be paid for just like you would in any other chronic illness.
Do you see that as happening now, or will there have to be some pretty major adjustments to get coverage for these drugs, for these counseling sessions, bariatric surgeries?
I think it's happening. It's happening slowly, however. And sometimes it's happening on a case-by-case basis, for example, with surgery. And so I'm really hoping that that the insurance companies see what we're dealing with here and really see the long term, which is hard sometimes for people to understand that the children with obesity are going to become, if we don't treat them, adults with really serious chronic illnesses that are going to be really devastating for them. So it's an ongoing discussion here.
Taking this home here to Wisconsin, it may not come to you as a surprise at all, but obesity rates among students in grades 9 through 12 have been steadily rising here from 2009 to 2019. What should states like Wisconsin and our communities do now in light of these guidelines?
I think it's always good to really look at where children are getting their nutrition and physical activity and start there. So support for healthy school meals, support for healthy meals during the summer if kids need them, physical activity woven even more tightly into the school day and after school programs, opportunities for children to get mental health help if they need help with weight bias and stigma, support for families, for nutrition education at the community level and physical activity opportunities. So I think an examination of how well are we really supporting our children here with healthy nutrition and activity. And if we're not, that should be the question everybody's asking.
We only have a couple seconds left, few seconds, but the obesity epidemic, will these new guidelines make a difference and bring this obesity epidemic in check?
We are certainly hoping that our push to really identify obesity as a chronic disease and get these guidelines out will do just that.
Dr. Hassink, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Pediatrician Sandra Hassink, Medical Director of the American Academy of Pediatrics Institute for Healthy Childhood Weight. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.